Yo, can I park here?
Let me see. Smith Street, sign says 15 minutes between front entrance. Yeah, it's probably fine.
Good. I'm just going to the AT&T store. There's a deal that's New York only. I'll run in and run out.
You didn't take the F?
Yo, you gonna park here?
Yeah, he's going to the AT&T store. They got a deal just for New York.
You didn't take the F?
Hey, New York, come into an AT&T store and find out how to get a smartphone for free. AT&T, more for your bargain hunter thing. That's our thing. Limited New York offer. See store for details.
Warning. This show contains adult political themes and language. Liberals and little children should cover their ears.
Welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps, where negativity never sounded so good. Now here's your host, Thomas Purcell.
Good morning and welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps. Make sure to follow the show at our website at libertyneversleeps.com. Be sure to follow our Twitter feed at Real Liberty Time and join us on Facebook at Real Liberty Never Sleeps on Facebook.com. Good morning. Good Monday morning. Thank goodness Brett Kavanaugh got approved and is now in office. He took the oath shortly after the vote was taken over the weekend. And not because I wanted Brett Kavanaugh to be on the Supreme Court. I did. But the main reason I'm glad it's over is so that we can move on from this catastrophe, from this nutty circus that we've been party to for the last couple weeks. I told you right from the get-go that Brett Kavanaugh was going to get approved no matter what. And everyone said, oh, no, he's going to withdraw and he's going to do this. I said, no. No way he's going to be. See, this is the sad thing. Over the last 2 weeks, there was no way the Democrats were going to stop Brett Kavanaugh. He could come out and literally be raping somebody, as the joke goes, and he would still get approved. And the Democrats decided to die on that hill. And let me tell you something. Some people have asked me, well, how did you know that? I said, look, it was easy to know. And here's why. The Republicans are invested in this election. It's going to be close. There is not going to be a blue wave. There's some doubt as to whether the Republicans will retain the House or the Senate. And it may go either way. They may lose control of the Senate. They may lose control of the House. I don't know. I've made my predictions. They're posted. But there's no doubt that the Republicans, if Kavanaugh didn't get approved, there would be a massive catastrophe for them fall. Because the Republican voter, by and large, the Republican voter wanted Brett Kavanaugh to be on the Supreme Court. They wanted a conservative justice. Donald Trump had nominated him. There was no obvious flaw in his judicial process or in his judgments. He was far right wing, and the average Republican voter wants Roe versus Wade overturned, despite what you've been told. The average, not every voter. And so if they didn't approve him, most Republican voters would say, well, if you're not going to stand up for our principles and you're not going to be a Republican, if you're not going to be conservative, if you're not going to stand up for Roe versus Wade, what will you stand up for? I'm not going to vote for you in the fall. I'm just going to sit at home. I'm going to give up. I'm going to say that the battle against City Hall, against the Democrats, is over, and we lost, and we can't win. And it would have been a catastrophe for them mentally. So they had to. Then there was the issue of the swing states. Jeff Flake was the only one that I thought, I might not vote for him. But I knew that they would get those votes because they had to. Murkowski didn't have to, but Collins had to. They were in red states. They were in election year. They had to vote no matter what. No matter what the evidence showed, by the way. Wouldn't matter what the FBI investigation, unless it was a smoking gun somewhere, there was no way they were not going to vote for Kavanaugh. There were some Democrats that would probably vote for Kavanaugh, too. It was about that possibility as well. These were Democrats in red states or in swing states like a Pennsylvania or something like that. They had to vote for him. If they didn't, they would be crucified by the Republican voters. It would motivate the Republican voters to turn out in their state and vote against them in the fall. Or in 30 days, I should say. No way. There was no way for Kavanaugh not to be approved. Now, the vote went largely down party lines, of course, and it was the closest vote in Supreme Court history. That I had no doubt. I knew it was going to be a 50 vote, 51, maybe 52, depending on how Flake voted. Flake wasn't up for re-election, owed nothing to anybody, but he was going to possibly run for president. He had been seen up in New Hampshire over this last weekend. So there was no way he would. That's why. And here's the thing. The Democrats knew this too. And they knew they couldn't win on this. And yet they decided to die on the hill. Why? They wanted to slander Brett Kavanaugh because it was political. They wanted to set the stage to give them an issue in 30 days to go to the voter with. Like, vote for us so that we can impeach Brett Kavanaugh. They're doing it now. That's why they decided to, as they say, die on that hill. Because they needed something. They had nothing to go on. They had no economy. They had no argument on the issues. You couldn't run on Donald Trump because he's one of the most successful presidents in recent history. There's no way that you're going to run on that. And they knew it. They knew that the blue wave was imploding. So they decided to come up with something on Brett Kavanaugh. They had this letter. And they figured, well, we'll delay it, we'll delay it, we'll delay it. And then when he doesn't get onto the Supreme Court, we can use it as a hammer against the Republican Party. And then we can go and say to the American people, oh, well, now we have control of the House. And now we have control of the Senate. We're going to save Roe versus Wade. We're going to save that. And that's why you need to vote. That's their failing. It was a complete political miscalculation. And that's the thing I didn't understand. When it became clear that there was no evidence against Brad Kavanaugh, no matter, regardless of whether you believe the story or not, there was no evidence. When that became apparent, and it became apparent that Republicans are going to do their jobs and vote for a candidate unless evidence is presented, they should have backed down. They should have said, okay, let's let it go. But they didn't. They persisted. And they're still persisting this morning, saying, well, we'll impeach him if you vote for us. And that's a complete failure. They didn't learn anything from the 2016 election. They didn't learn a thing. What was the 2016 election about? Was about what? The war on women, right? Hillary Clinton, vote in a woman as president because only a woman can represent your needs. And it was a catastrophic failure. Not just because Hillary Clinton was the candidate, but also because women don't largely vote as a single issue thing. They vote based on politics, just like anybody else does, just like a man does. Either because they're conservative or because they're liberal, because of variety issues facing. They don't vote a certain way because somebody's a woman. And they're going to redo that war on women and relabel it as the Me Too movement. That's what they're going to try and do. They didn't learn anything. Who voted for Donald Trump? Both Republicans and Democrats. The statistics show it. And more importantly, it also shows that Donald Trump won with more women votes than either John McCain or Mitt Romney got. So this idea that you're going to divide America into male and female and that women will vote one way and that men will vote another came only from one place, Hillary Clinton. That's why Brett Kavanaugh talked about Clinton in his speech. That's why he blamed politics on this whole thing. He knew what it was all about. It was about a divide and conquer method, and it's what Democrats have been doing for the last, I don't know, 30 years or so. We're going to talk about it today because of that, because of the relationship between that and the Kavanaugh vote, because what they're talking about this blue wave, which doesn't exist, and what they're trying to do is divide us into parties. By the way, what was Alyssa Milano doing on Meet the Press? Meet the Press on NBC is supposed to be, or even why she was in the room with the Brett Kavanaugh, is supposed to be a discussion about politics using clearer and more intelligent minds than the average media show. That's what it is. It's about politicians, quote unquote, meeting the press and facing questions. Senators, congressmen, political experts, and then being on Meet the Press is kind of a thing. You face down hot, it's like being a hot seat for a politician. What was Alyssa Milano doing on there? And she absolutely made a buffoon of herself. I got here an exact quote from the show, which she is proud of because she retweeted it. That's what is shocking. It's a bunch of gibberish that I asked people on the internet, what the hell does this mean? This is an exact quote. She says, I think that this cultural shift that we're feeling, this collective pain that we're feeling from survivors coming forward, is going to be able to translate it into a collective power to say that we're not going to be silenced anymore. What the hell is that? What? Alyssa Milano's not doesn't have the mentality, doesn't have the experience, doesn't have the time and knowledge to be discussing politics in any way, shape, or form. Now, if she wants to be a celebrity and tweet out certain things, that's freedom of speech, right? But this is Meet the Press. This is supposed to be something where we have an intellectual discussion. Alyssa Milano has a head full of cotton candy, all right? This is not a person that has deep intellectual thought. She may be a great musician. She may have millions of followers, and maybe that's why they put her on. It's NBC, right? She's got millions of followers. Let her come out and say that it's that Brett Kavanaugh is bad for America and bad for the Supreme Court, and then all the millions of dunderheads that follow Alyssa Milano will vote for somebody else in the fall. I guess that was the thinking. But it just embarrassed her, in my opinion. And many of the political pundits on Twitter and Facebook said the same thing. Like, what the hell? Why is she even on there? And worse, made a complete, as they say, buffoon about her. It really was a buffoonery. I want to talk about buffoonery and about blue politics. We're going to spend today's hour on discussing the concept of blue politics, why it doesn't work, why this politics of division, why dividing America into subgroups and using the media as a tool to do it, using celebrities as a tool. Alyssa Milano is being used too. So are most of the celebrities. They're being used for their money and their capital, these fundraisers that revolve around celebrities. You know, they have these big fundraisers where you get to meet so-and-so. So everybody goes. All the famous people go and they all donate money. That's just a big scam. They're scamming celebrities out of money. They're scamming voters who follow these celebrities. We're going to talk about all of it, the politics of division, and then the results of it, our failing cities, and what the results of this politics of division is. Let's take a break. And let's discuss the original concept of America. It's important for you to understand that. It's important for you to understand why we aren't a mass democracy. Because if you think that America is democracy, then you need to go back to civics class and understand what the Founding Fathers intended when they were setting up this country in the first place. We'll be right back after this brief break. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support.
Red Solo Cup, I fill you up. Let's have a party. Let's have a party. I love you, Red Solo Cup. I lift you up. Proceed to party.
Red Solo Cup. I love that song. Have you ever heard that song, Toby Keith? When Brett Kavanaugh got approved, I mean, I know this is a little aside here, but when Brett Kavanaugh, that's all I could think about. And that story of him throwing ice from a Red Solo cup, it was supposedly at, I guess, a UB40 concert or something like that. There was a confrontation. They tried to make too much of it. I immediately thought of that. I immediately thought of that song, Toby Keith. I made a meme out of it. It sticks in your head. You know, and I hadn't thought about that song in years, but this one, Brett Kavanaugh got proof. I said, I'm going to play this really loud. And I'm going to drink from a Red Solo cup and maybe throw ice at my neighbors. It struck me as funny. Anyway, the point of what our founding fathers were. Look, first of all, America is not a democracy, except in the general sense. We have democratic values, but we are a republic. And what a republic is where you vote for representatives. And then those representatives take their knowledge, experience, basically cooler heads, and vote on issues or make laws. That is the point of a republic. When the founding fathers were all sitting around the table, right? And they're all saying, okay, what kind of country are we going to have? We wanted democratic values. We wanted to self-govern ourselves. That was the first thing. It was called the Great Experiment because in 1787, which is the founding date of our Constitution, 1776 was the Declaration. I often say that because people, you know, you get those letters. Oh, it wasn't in 1776 this country was founded, but 1787 and vice versa. People say, oh, no, 1776, don't you know anything? You know, so you go back and forth. They were trying to decide what this country was. Well, in that period of time, there weren't countries like America. There weren't any democracies, at least insofar as large countries or well-known countries. And there weren't anything close to what they were thinking about in the Founding Fathers. As a matter of fact, that's why our country was called the Great Experiment. Because most of the world lived under that period monarchies or dictators or empires and had been doing so for thousands of years. There were very few republics and very few democracies up to that point. And so they went with the guiding principle of what Greek thinkers were, was democratica or a democracy. But they realized the inherent dangers of democracy. It's not that they believed that people were stupid. It's just that people could be manipulated. And anyone who's been in a mob or anyone who knows about mob politics knows that people can be either manipulated into a certain vote or pressured into a certain vote. As a matter of fact, de Tocqueville wrote a great book on it and why America would probably fail or why America would probably succeed, depending on your point of view of the book, about why democracies don't work. Ultimately, the conclusion is that when people eventually come to the realization that they can empty the granaries on a vote, in other words, benefit themselves via a vote, then that will be the end of the republic. It doesn't matter when. It might be 100 years from now. It might be 2 years from now. It might be 1,000 years from now. But at a certain point, the people begin to realize, well, if we all just simply give ourselves what we want, then that will be utopia, and that will be the end of the republic. So the founding fathers said, well, we can put safeguards to prevent that. We don't give people a direct say in their government. They have to vote for electors. And the thinking was, well, you couldn't rise to the position of a senator or a president or a representative without having something a little bit better than the average person on the ball. A little smarter, a little cooler head, a little more well-heeled, more property owners, that sort of thing. There was a discussion about whether they have property owners only vote, or the discussion, of course, of what's called the three-fifths compromise. They were worried about plantation owners who had slaves, and they were worried about the plantation owner telling the slaves to vote in a certain way, which is why we had the three-fifths compromise, that a slave would only have three-fifths vote. It wasn't racism. It was designed to protect slavery because they didn't want slavery in our nation. But they had to compromise in order to get the southern states to join the Union and not be two countries or 13 countries for that matter. They had the concept of what's called a republic and a conglomeration of states. In other words, states would all retain their own sovereignty. State of Virginia, state of Florida, state of Georgia. And they would all have their own idiosyncrasies. Because there was a discussion around the table, and the people of Georgia wanted slavery. People of Georgia wanted different rules. They said, we live a different lifestyle than you do up in Rhode Island or Massachusetts. And the founding fathers recognized it. And they said, well, let's have a conglomeration of states. And then in areas that are in common good to everyone, we'll have a set of founding principles and we'll put it together in our Constitution. Everything else is going to be left to the states. But we're going to have certain things. We're all going to have the same system of justice. We're all going to have a common defense. These are things that are spelled out in the Constitution. And they also realize that government, by its very nature, even a republic, will become bigger and more powerful as time goes on because it has the power to levy taxes. It has the power to raise a military. And so we're going to put limits on that power. This is called the Bill of Rights. You have the right of freedom of speech. That's the most important thing. The American people, no matter what state you're from, have a right to complain about their government, have a right to criticize, and government can't stop you from doing that. Then you also, in the Second Amendment, have the right to defend yourself. You have a right to arm yourself. That's just in case that they fail on the First Amendment. You have the right to basically pick up an arm and defend yourself and your rights. Then we have additional laws on justice, the rights of privacy. We can't quarter troops in your home. We can't search your home. You have a certain right of privacy in your home. There's no right of abortion. There's no right of medical insurance. Founding fathers had no concept of that, no desire for that. Because they said in the 10th Amendment, after they got through all the limits to American federal power, they said, well, we're also going to leave a loophole. Anything that we couldn't think of or doesn't exist now, because they knew America was a growing country, a changing country, we're going to leave that to the states. We're going to say whatever goes is not spelled out specifically in this Constitution is going to be left to the states. And everybody got along with that idea. And so everybody signed aboard, the 13 colonies signed. That was the point of a republic. It wasn't a concept of everyone has one vote, one say. It wasn't a concept of everyone has a certain or the majority rules. They didn't want that because they knew that the mass populations could be manipulated. It's not that they thought, like I said, Americans are stupid. They just felt it's too easy to manipulate people. And we don't want the majority of people overrunning the minority. We don't want the states of, let's say, New York having more of a say than the state of Rhode Island. We're going to make a situation. And then we're going to divide power up. We're going to give the military and the president. We're going to give the judiciary its own separate branch. And then we're going to say only Congress can make laws. And each one of those different powers and separation of powers in our government is going to have a veto over the other power. That's where we're going to do it. That's going to create gridlock, they said. Yeah, that's good. We want gridlock. We don't want a fast-moving or vigorous government. We want the American people to be the vigorous ones. We want people to be able to do what they want, provided they don't offend anybody in the sense of their rights. Nobody steps on anybody's toes. We're going to make certain things and certain allowances. And if the people of New York want to live one way, that's fine. And people of Georgia want to live another. That way worked well for about 100 years until a big issue came up and was slavery. Then that's what divided the republic. And it also changed the republic. Because they said the issue of men's rights and the concept of individual rights supersedes the writing of the Constitution. There's nothing in the Constitution about slavery. In fact, many of the founding fathers knew that it would eventually drive America apart. They felt, look, if we're going to have a concept of equal justice, of man being treated as equals, regardless of the way they live, then what about slaves? They're men too. And the Southern states says, well, if you give them freedom, we're not going to sign aboard this Constitution. That's why the compromise existed. It wasn't because they were racist. It was because they wanted a republic. They just didn't want mass democracy. Because if they got into that situation of mass democracy, they knew it eventually would fail. Some say the failure was the Civil War. That's something that's very important that you understand. Because America, particularly among the Democratic Party, think a certain way that the majority should rule, that really there should be only one power. As a matter of fact, Rob Reiner tweeted out, I don't understand why we have two parties. He tweeted out, we should all have one party governing, and the vast majority of people in this country are progressive, and so therefore they should be the ones in power. That's completely opposite of what the founding fathers wanted for this country, and frankly, it isn't even true. The Democratic Party is very good at exploiting that because the American people don't have a knowledge of our Constitution and our founding principles of what a republic is. Some say it's a deliberate attempt by not teaching civics in grade school, grammar school, high school, and then on to college. People don't have a good understanding of why our country is set up the way it is. Oh, they have a knowledge of what the Senate is, what the House is, and of what our laws are, and the division of power. A lot of people do have a general concept or a general feeling of how the country is, but they don't understand why that is. They don't understand why the separation of powers is so important. They don't understand why we have a republic, why we have a two-party system, why we have two houses in the Congress. And because of that, it can be exploited. And people say dumb things when they don't have an understanding of why our country is the way it is. And one of the things that Democrats have been very successful in is telling people that our founding fathers and our founding principles, the Constitution itself, is racist. They've been very successful in painting the founding fathers as flawed. And so therefore, anything they thought of, any concepts they have, is flawed in and of itself. And therefore, you could throw everything into the wind. It's called the politics of division. Divide and conquer. If our founding fathers were racist, if our founding fathers were a certain thing or had flaws that were common to the men of the period, then therefore the document of the Constitution which they drew up is flawed too, and therefore can be rejected and rewritten. Even though the founding fathers put in precepts which protect the American people from a changing country, the amendment process. Even though we have a legislative process and a democratic way of voting, you voted for members of the House, for instance. It's because people don't have an understanding of civics, of how our country works, the why. Let's talk about those politics of division. Let's take a break. I want to talk about how they exploit that division and get American people to fight with each other over things they should be all agreeing on. We'll be right back.
Other girls did it. You didn't think of nothing new. You went out on me, so other girls did it too.
Democrats were very successful in this Kavanaugh hearing in dividing America. There were a lot of people in my social media who said, I believe her. Frankly, I believe her too. That doesn't mean that Brett Kavanaugh shouldn't be on the Supreme Court, though. Well, I want to talk about this a little bit because it's very important and what the Democrats are very successful in doing, and not just the Kavanaugh issue, but many issues. They change your interpretation of the law based on your feelings. For instance, there was no evidence in the case of Brett Kavanaugh. None. Absolutely zero. The FBI has done 6 investigations into Brett Kavanaugh. The 7th, this last one, looks specifically at the accusation of Dr. Ford. And what the Democrats were successfully doing is conflating the accusation of a crime with the truth of it. And saying that if those accusations exist, then there's a possibility that Brett Kavanaugh may be guilty. And so therefore, if you support our system of justice, which is proof, you have to have proof before guilt, that someone is innocent until proven guilty, then you are therefore someone as bad as Kavanaugh, and you are a hater of women. And that's how they divide the American people. They divide them into camps. Special interest groups is what they used to call it. You have a certain interest in seeing Roe versus Wade being upheld. And so therefore, because Brett Kavanaugh was accused of a crime, Brett Kavanaugh can't sit on the court. And so therefore, Roe versus Wade. That's how they divide and conquer. And then they take advantage of it. Then they say, well, because that happened, because the Republican Party is anti-woman, because they say that Dr. Ford's accusations aren't true, which isn't the case. They said that Dr. Kavanaugh's accusation can't be proven. Then therefore you should vote against them. They were very successful in that in many cases, and it's particularly notable at the state level. Same thing with Barack Obama. Barack Obama was very successful in exploiting that. People aren't voting for me because they're racist, because I'm a black man. Or you should vote for this issue because they're... In other words, like the police, for instance, the Blue Lives Matter movement. Police are shooting blacks. Well, why are they shooting blacks? Because they are racist. So therefore, we need to revamp our justice system. Our founding fathers were racist. They made a constitution that's racist. So therefore, the constitution should be invalidated and thrown out. General Lee fought for the Southern Army. Therefore, he must have been a plantation owner. Therefore, he was racist. Therefore, we should tear down that statue. That's how they do it. They operate on a condition of flawed logic. And they divide Americans into different camps so that everybody starts fighting with each other. Well, if you support that, then you support all this. If you support Brett Kavanaugh, then you must hate women. And as everybody is fighting, they go to both sides and say, if you vote for me, I'll solve this problem. Vote for me and I can fix this problem. We can impeach Brett Kavanaugh in the case of him. Well, we can tear down that statue. We'll make it legal for you to have the last word. We'll be your arbiters of truth and justice. That's the exact opposite of what the founding fathers wanted. They wanted both the majority and the minority to have rights in our country. That's the whole point of a republic. That's why the civics lessons are so important, so that you understand that. When you have two parties coming together, and I did a whole show on this, and doing something for the common good, that's tyranny. Because then the majority has a say, but the minority doesn't. There's a certain minority in this country that feel differently than you do, or a majority, vice versa. There's a difference between a resident of a city and the resident of a rural county. They have different needs. What's important to the city voter is not important to the rural voter. Worse, they've divided people on the basis of what? Wealth. That's why our cities look like the way they do. That's why they look like bombed out cities in World War II. They're taking advantage of that. Well, the conditions here in the city are so bad, therefore we have government programs, we can solve it for you. We know better. We can do more. And they do it on heartstrings. The argument about Brett Kavanaugh, which is a classic nutshell argument of blue versus red politics, is that you feel that Christine Blasey Ford, that emotional, that testimony, that feeling that you feel is more important than what the evidence shows. It's feelings versus logic, evidence versus accusation. And they divide America, and then they say, we can be the solution to that. We can solve the Brett Kavanaugh problem. And they're going to translate that into votes. But the result of that is a division in this country. Roe versus Wade, as an example, was exploited by the left wing. Not because they're supporters of abortion rights, not because they say that women have the right to abortion. That's what they tell you. The reason they're doing it is because it divides people based on feelings. Roe versus Wade was a bad decision because it broke the country up into two groups, those who support abortion and those who are against it. And they didn't allow for legislative decisions and localities to make that final decision. There is no mention of abortion in the Constitution. There certainly was abortion at the time of the Founding Fathers, so obviously they didn't think of it, and they left it to the 10th Amendment. They didn't think it was important enough to make it in the federal document. They didn't think it important enough. Well, because they were sexist, see? That's what the Democrats do. The Founding Fathers were sexist. They didn't believe that women had the right to vote. Therefore, they didn't reveal that it was important enough for abortion to be spelled out in the document. Okay, then let's write some laws and let's amend the Constitution. But that's not what they say, do they? No, let's keep that as a right for the Supreme Court to decide for nine men in the ropes. And therefore, it's divisive to society because you didn't have a say in that. You don't have a say in Supreme Court decisions. It wasn't handled legislatively. There are a lot of people in this country that feel differently about Roe versus Wade. That's okay. That's what the 10th Amendment is for. The Founding Fathers were smarter than you. They knew putting something like that in our document by establishing rights for the human beings, which is not what the Constitution does. It establishes limits on power. By establishing rights for people, you divide the nation. And so we're going to leave it to the states. California wants to have one rule, that's fine. New York wants to have another, that's okay too. And we went down this path of federalism, and it led to the Civil War because of slavery, which they felt superseded a state's individual rights because of the inherent basis of the document that all men are created equal, all justice is equal, equal protection under the law. And that's the debate I don't even want to get into today. But the Democrats exploit that because of feelings. Whereas Republicans, think about the name of the title too, Democrats, democracy, Republicans, republic. That think everybody should be equal. Everybody should have an equal say in government. Even the small group of people with a minority view are just as important as the people who have the majority view. What do the Democrats stand for? Well, they said they want to get rid of the Electoral College. The Electoral College protects minority states, Rhode Island, for instance, or small, low-populated states like Montana and Wyoming. Their votes should count just as much as the people of California's and Los Angeles. That's why the Electoral College exists. The Founding Fathers were wise enough even to protect individual rights, the minority, in terms of presidential elections. People often say, well, the majority of these people elected Hillary Clinton. Yeah, but that's not how we elect a president. We elect a president with the Electoral College system. That's why we have it. So that the majority don't always have a say in our government, so that sometimes the minority get their way. That's how it works. And the Democrats have been very good at gaining power that way, because they always say we're the solution to it. And what do our cities look like as a result? Let's take a break, and I want to talk about cities, because that's really the bedrock of our country, especially as we go into a more technological and information age. We'll be right back. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to libertyneversleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support. And we're back. Why do cities look like the way they do? The vast majority of cities is what I'm talking about. Detroit, Los Angeles, New Orleans, San Francisco, Miami. Why are they hotbeds for slums, crime, division, poverty, famine, disease? Why is that all common and endemic to cities? Besides the obvious reason that too many people living together lead to problems. Why do cities look the way they do? Why do some cities look better than others? Why are some cities better run? You'll find that the majority of cities which have lower crime rates, lower poverty rates, lower rates of problems, are generally cities where the people have more say. And people say to me, well, what do you mean where people have more say? No, in blue cities, in Democrat cities, you'll find that the city councils and mayors are much more powerful than in red cities. And as such, do things which redistribute wealth to poor people. Everything from mass transit to public works to jobs programs, all of these are all redistribution of wealth, a way of taking wealth away from those who produce and give it to those who don't. Republican ideals state, no, you, the individual, are more important and you have a right to certain things, but you have to earn them for yourself. As I said, their basis in evidence-based argument, in logic-based argument, rather than in feelings. Democrats run cities based on feelings. Oh, poor people are suffering. Let's give them something. But the problem is they don't understand, or they either know it and ignore it, or they don't understand it at all because of intellect depth. That poverty and problems in society, as I said, famine, plague, disease, anything, any of a wealth of city problems, aren't caused by a lack of money. A homeless person isn't homeless because he doesn't have money. That's the easy answer. That's the obvious thing. Oh, well, he doesn't have money. That's why he doesn't have a house. That's why he doesn't have a home. That's why he doesn't have an apartment. That's why he doesn't have a job. There are no jobs. Nobody's hiring him because he's black, because she's a woman. That's their argument. But that's not why they're there. People are poor. People are lower rungs in society. People have bad problems happen to them because of the decisions they make. They have a problem with their decision-making process. They chose to take drugs and became addicted. They chose to imbibe in alcohol when they knew they had a problem and didn't get help. They didn't have places to go to get help. Something bad happened to them because, and they said, well, I'm bankrupt because I have a situation where I became ill with cancer. But you didn't buy insurance. It's a bad decision you made. You chose a decision that took you down a path which led to where you are now. It's not a matter of blaming people for their problems, but you have to look at it analytically and logically. And the Democrats' solution to it is just give them money. Well, they have a problem with their health care. They can't get health care. They go to a hospital and they can't afford proper care. So let's give them health insurance. Let's give them money to solve their problems. But that doesn't really solve the problem, does it? What do we still have people getting sick in society today and can't get health care? Sure. Sure we do. No more and no less than was before Obamacare. So what was the point of Obamacare? I mean, the concept of Obamacare, the concept of universal health care, clearly, is so that poor people have a way to get it proper health care, correct? I mean, no one, I don't think anyone would argue with that, with left or right. So why did we pass the law? Well, we passed the law saying that poor people were going to increase the poverty limit, more poor people could get health care, and we're going to make it affordable for everybody. It's going to be subsidized by the taxpayer. Obamacare. Gold, silver, bronze plans. This will be a way for you to get health insurance cheaply. Except it didn't do that, did it? There's actually commercials on TV. Don't buy high-priced Obamacare policies. What happened? Well, the price just went up. That's all that really happened. That's all that ever happens with these policies by the Democrats. And they benefit from that. And that divides people further. Now they're saying, well, we need complete universal health care. They never said that before. They always said, this is the solution. Obamacare is the solution. They created the problem in the first place, and now they're saying, well, we need universal health care to fix Obamacare. That's how the Democrats gain power. And as that increases in society, the problems in society increase as well. There are poor people now. There were poor people in 1888. There were poor people in 1788. There were slums back then, too. All the jobs programs didn't solve it, because it didn't solve the inherent problem of human beings making poor decisions. Jobs program won't get anybody a job. You know why? Because they go to work and they do the same problems that got them fired from their other job. They had poor decision-making process. They had anger issues. They had drug issues. They were a kind of person which may have psychological issues. Anywhere from PTSD to all kinds of small neuroses that the average person has, and they may prevent from being jobbed. They could also make poor decision in their education. Decide to go to the wrong school, the wrong college, or not go to college at all, or not go to school at all, or not pay attention when they get there, not do well. These are all decisions that they're made. And no program in the world is going to solve that and makes it worse, because what happens is they go to the program and they take a job, let's say, that it was given for them for a job program. Let's say a truck driver. That's very common. You go to a good jobs program, it's a truck driver, because anybody can drive a truck, right? Anybody with a driver's license or anybody competent enough to steer a truck. But it doesn't solve the problem, mainly because, why? Like I said, decision-making process. And then, of course, now they have the additional burden of paying the tax to pay for the jobs program. They turn college education into a system like that. Well, you need to get a college education. That's why you don't have a job, college education. So you say, okay, I'm going to do what government says. I'm going to get a college education. I'm going to borrow money from government. Government's going to provide a program where anybody can get a college loan to go to government. Except now what? Now you still can't get a job, and what? Now you got to pay the debt. You have the tax problem. Even if you do get a job, you have a problem. They turned our college loan program into a tax. It's the old saying that it's like trying to solve a problem in society, whether it be poverty or sickness or whatever, is like trying to lift yourself up by standing in a bucket and pulling up the handles. It doesn't work, because all of the burden put on you as a taxpayer to provide those programs in the first place, like a jobs program or health insurance, makes you even more likely to end up in that problem in the first place, because you have to pay the tax. Doesn't work. That's why any redistribution of wealth doesn't work. Oh, we're going to provide mass transit so your streets are clear and we don't have traffic. Okay. You sign a board. You vote for a Democrat. Say, that sounds good to me because I'm tired of sitting in traffic. And then what? Well, then there's this burdensome tax that you have to pay for the light rail system or the transit system in the first place. And then what happens? You're broke. And so you live in squalid, poverty-stricken conditions. You have to live in a smaller apartment or a home. You have to live. That's why blue cities look like the way they do. Take a look at real estate prices in blue cities. They're much higher than they are in red cities. Why is that? Because it's more difficult to build homes. They're higher taxed. You have higher minimum wages. These all contribute to higher inflation rates, higher costs of living. And so as a result, real estate prices are more expensive. And so what happens? You live in a smaller home than you would in let's say, a red state or a red city. And so therefore, you have a lower quality of life. Take a look at Europe. Europe is far more socialistic than America is. And look at how people live. The average person, they live in much smaller, much more squalid conditions. Oh, you have health care and you have transit. You have trains and buses. But they aren't doing anything. The cities aren't growing. The cities aren't modernizing. People are living in the same conditions they did 200 years ago. Why do you think that is? It's because they have the onerous burden of the government sitting on top of everything. 70% of their paycheck goes back to the government in certain ways. In America, it's lower. It's somewhere close to 45 to 50. And so as a result, conditions are a little better here in America. But they want to take us down that road. Democrats do. Because why? Because Democrats, the ones in charge making the decisions, don't live in those squalid conditions because they can what? Control the pay to themselves. One of the best paying jobs in California is a state job. Better benefits, better pay. People like supervisors and city planners, city managers and city. I mean, it's so bad in California. It's actually criminal. They're arresting guys for doing that, getting six-figure salaries. Here in Phoenix, we have a problem with extensive pensions. That's how they structure it here. You get a decent paycheck to be a Phoenix city employee, but man, those pensions. They get 2 to 3 times their annual salary in pension. It's bankrupting us. And why? Because of the system, the politics of division. And so there's no building going on, no repairing of the streets. Fire hydrants pop off. Because where's the money going? To provide benefits for those people in on the scam. That's why cities, Democrat cities, look the way they do. All of the money is to benefit the employees of the city. And they're taxing the hell out of anyone who's not. And if you're not in on the scam, you just live in squalid conditions. And the more blue a city is, the more blue a state is, the worse it is. Take a look at California. Los Angeles, San Francisco, all of the major cities are all sewers. The outlying areas are run better, and guess what? They're run by red states and red governors. That's what's going on in our cities. And what happens is when those conditions worsen and people have trouble finding jobs, people have trouble paying the rent. Remember, the rent is too high. They turn to who? The Democrats, because the Democrats are the ones that say, we can solve it. Vote for me. We'll create a program to create jobs. Vote for me. We'll create a system to fix that. We'll create this or we'll create that. We'll create a light rail to solve your transit problems. And as a Republican, it's very hard to fight that, because what is your solution to it? Well, you need to do things on your own. Well, we're going to make it possible for you to get a job on your own. Well, that doesn't sell. Because in order for that to sell, you have to explain to people everything that I'm doing on this show. And the people don't have time for that. They want to listen to a 30-second soundbite. I'll give you this. I'll give you that. I'll give you this. It's de Tocqueville's problem all over again. People voting to empty the granaries. They're hungry. How do we solve the problem? Empty the granary. What happens when the granary runs out? Then what? Nobody thinks of that. Republicans always say the same thing. What happens when the money runs out? That's why they try and divide America into special interest groups. Let's talk about that next. We'll be right back. You know, Nancy Pelosi was talking the other day in front of a podium, you know? I think she's had more plastic surgery again. I think her ears are pinned back to the back of her head. She's had so much plastic surgery, so much Botox, it's going to her brain. She was actually talking about how successful the Democrats are, and it's all big game. Honest to God, she's basically describing it. She says, what we do is we scandalize somebody, and the media runs with it. And then when the guy escapes the scandal or is destroyed by it, we then sell it again. We say, well, you know what? The Republicans are like this. The Republicans are doing this. Republicans are doing that. And we've been very successful. The Democrat Party has been very successful on selling you that Republicans want to destroy Medicare and Social Security. They've made a career out of it. Because the Republicans are always talking about logic and facts, that the system itself is in trouble. Social Security is going bankrupt. So is Medicare. And their solution is, well, let's say that the people coming into the system now, people who are 18 years old, they're going to pay a little bit more tax and they're going to retire later. That will extend the life of the Social Security program for some time. And Medicare, well, we need to reduce it down to 100% of the poverty level, or maybe not make the prescription value as rich for new people entering it. People that are already in, we're not going to take away your medicine or whatever, because that would be onerous. We've made a promise to you. And they talk about this in Congress and people running for office. Well, we're going to fix Social Security. We're going to fix Medicare. So what do the Democrats come out and say? He wants to take away your Social Security. No Republican has ever voted to take away Social Security. No Republican has ever even spoke about reducing benefits for existing policyholders or existing recipients. They're talking about new people entering the system because the system as it stands is going bankrupt. The system as designed is not what is intended. And so therefore the entitlement grows. Social Security is being turned into an entitlement itself. More money is going out of the Social Security system on disability and other benefits rather than onto what it was originally intended, retirees. And that's how they sell it. They divide America into little groups. And they say, what they're trying to do is something awful. They're trying to take away something from you. And nobody likes that. I mean, you're sitting there and you're dependent upon Social Security. You're an elderly person that didn't put any money away. So your only income is Social Security. And somebody comes along and says, hey, knocks on your door. Did you know the Republicans are trying to take away your Social Security? Kristen Sinema is doing it here to great effect. Did you know that Martha McSally wants to take away your health insurance? Do you know that she wants to raise the bills that you pay on people 55 or older? And so you go, oh my God, I don't want that guy in office. All right, give me your pamphlet. I'm going to think about this. I'm going to think about that. And then one of two things happens. They believe him, and they vote Democrat. Because we got to protect Social Security. We got to protect Medicare. We got to protect Obamacare. Or they get confused on the issue. And they go, well, I don't know. Martha McSally didn't say. She said this information. And you say that information. Well, I'm just going to sit it out. I don't know what to do. Because people are like that. And the combination of the two effect has empowered Democrats for the last 50 years. What does the vote look like? Honestly, how many people in this country vote? In a presidential election, it's the highest level. Midterms and local elections typically have lower turnouts. It's only about 45% of registered voters actually vote in an election. Less if you count the population. If the total population, because a lot of people aren't even registered to vote. It's something like 20%. And the Democrats are always telling people, get out and vote, get out and vote. But what they really mean is, no, we're going to confuse the hell out of people. And so that's why, as the Democrats have gotten more powerful in society, you've seen the vote go down. We're going to tell them all kinds of things that aren't true. Republicans say, no, you're telling this and you're telling that. Because why? Republicans are evidence-based, logic-based. Democrats are feelings-based. And it confuses the average voter. And so there's lower voter turnout. What are they talking about in the fall elections? They're making it about Brett Kavanaugh. Vote for us and we'll impeach Brett Kavanaugh. They talk about the most people in this country are liberal. Most people in this country are progressive. That always gives me a laugh, considering the progressive politics have only been around for 40 or 50 years. All of a sudden, most of the country are progressive, huh? See, they buy into their own press. People vote Democrat because of what's called the ground game. They get buses to take people to the polling places. They get their church leaders to say to their constituents, you know what? You need to vote for Democrats. And you need to vote for this person or that person. And there's a bus outside that'll take you right now to the polls. You don't think that happens? It's a common in cities, particularly among minority voters. It's called the ground game. And there are other accusations of voter fraud, voter manipulation. But the real manipulation is pulling on the heartstrings of people rather than voting with their heads. And the founding fathers knew that when they came up with the Republic. They said, you know, people are not very smart about these things. They're not educated. People don't have the time to invest in learning about an issue thoroughly before they vote. So we're going to put in a system in place where people can do this for a living or have time to study the issues. You know, the founding fathers themselves had a lot of free time for a variety of reasons. They were wealthy men, generally. Generally, they were wealthy men. And that's who they wanted to govern the country. You know, we spend a little more time looking at the issues. And so therefore, vote for us or vote for me or vote for him, and we'll take care of it for you. And we didn't want professionals, for instance, running professional politicians. We just wanted people who had more time on their hands, as they did. They were farmers. They had a field hand. They had workers or slaves running their farms and plantations and whatnot. And so they had a little bit more free time than the average person. As a matter of fact, the breaks that we have in Congress, you know how they talk about a midterm break and how Congress is only in session a certain amount of days a year? The rest of the time they now spend campaigning, but it used to be you had to go back and take care of your farm or your business during those periods, since that's why they set up the Constitution that way. We now have professional politicians, of course, which is something I'm totally against. I would like to see part-time politicians again. Arizona still holds to that. You know, pay here for a city councilman is pretty low. Good. Let's keep it so that somebody has to earn a living some other way. But they're going to make this fall election about Brett Kavanaugh. And the reason they're doing it is because the politics of division. Let's make it about women versus men. Let's make it about the Me Too movement. Let's make it about the casting room couch, because let's not talk about issues on a logical basis. Let's not talk about evidence against Brett Kavanaugh. Let's not talk about why Democrat policies make cities look the way they are. Let's talk about Brett Kavanaugh, because everyone saw Dr. Ford. Everyone saw her weeping and crying in front of Congress. I told you that was going to happen. And the Republicans fell into that trap, making it about emotions rather than issues, rather than making it about the crying Dr. Ford, rather than about the evidence against Brett Kavanaugh. In the end, the cooler and wiser heads won the day. But that's changing. Because of social media, because the mainstream media on the evening news constantly shows you horror stories instead of truth, reports in a way called advocacy journalism rather than factually. You know, when they try to raise money, we do it here on the show, Patreon. That's our crowdfunding site where you donate money to the show. By the way, sign-up buttons are on our website. Whenever they do fundraising for, like, let's say PETA, you know, the animals ads, or children sick in Africa, well, we have to do something, and they show the horrible pictures of an abused pet in a cage. They're not pulling on your logic and reason. They're not talking to you about spaying and neutering your pet. They never talk about that. They talk about, send us money because these poor pets, these poor animals, these poor people in Africa are dying and suffering. You want to help people in Africa? Stop sending them food. Stop sending them housing. Watch what happens when people go hungry. They don't sit around and just do nothing. Ship them guns wrapped in copies of our Constitution and say, this is what you should do. You should make your government like this. That's how things change. That's the Republican argument. You want to see people get up off their buns in a city which is covered in poverty? Look down at cities like Los Angeles. Take a look at downtown. I've shown videos of this on Facebook, how horrible conditions are in Los Angeles. We did a story that there was typhus spreading, flea-borne typhus spreading in Los Angeles. You want to see things change in LA? Stop feeding them. Stop handing them out entitlements. Watch how fast city council changes. Hell, you might have a revolution. You might have an uprising. That might be a good thing. Throw the bums out. And you'll start to see that change happening. That's why jobs programs are so popular with the Democrats, to keep people in control. It's very easy to control people when they're the ones handing out the money. We're out of time. They're going to make it about Kavanaugh. They're going to make the fall election about Kavanaugh. It's basically the war on women relabeled as the Me Too movement. And you could fall into that trap if you're a woman, if you want to. And you can end up selling your soul for a handout. The Republican way is better. No, we're not going to give you those handouts. We're going to give you the ability to do it on your own. You know what? That's what Donald Trump's policies have been, economic policies have been for the last 2 years. Corporations, businesses, the average guy in the street, they know how to create jobs by producing a product, selling it. Let them do it. We're out of time. I hope you enjoyed today's shows. We're going to be back here tomorrow. We've got a busy week. I got a lot on this docket. It's going to be interesting to see what the next outrage is by the left. They're going to run on this Kavanaugh thing for another couple days, and then something else is going to pop up that they're going to be outraged. Donald Trump will say something, make a speech. Donald Trump has been the best thing for the left wing, because why? It's unified them. Oh, look at, he said something horrible. He's doing something different than what is supposed to be what you're supposed to do. That's why he's so popular with people like me. That's why he's making America different, making America great again, making a country where you, the people, have the power instead of the people in charge. It's what the founding fathers wanted. Take care, folks. Have a good one.